The Nearbound podcast is sponsored by MindMatrix, the industry's leading partner ecosystem orchestration platform. MindMatrix centralizes the enablement of internal and external revenue teams to support all partner operations. Alliances to influencers and everything in between, MindMatrix has you covered as a next-gen PRM. Check out MindMatrix. They're designed to meet all the current and future partnership needs to orchestrate your Nearbound strategies. Thank you to MindMatrix.
We're back at last for the Nearbound podcast, a very special edition with Gain, Grow, Retain, Jeff and Jay, the number one podcast in all of customer success. We finally get the intro in after the third try with technical difficulties, but this is a very special live pod crossover. So thank you so much, Jay and Jeff, for joining us. Welcome to this mashup.
Thanks.
I appreciate y'all having us. I'm loving the vibe of where you guys are. You know, this joint space looks like in Florida. We're coming to you from Charleston, South Carolina, which is, you know, weather's nice. And then Jay's just sitting outside of a brownstone, it looks like, in New York City.
And he's losing light quickly.
Yeah, losing light quickly. It's already dark here. And somebody mentioned joint, and I do smell the gentle waft of marijuana.
Oh, my goodness. So, appreciate everyone getting together, and for the folks that are hanging out after hours in the chat, I see chat popping off. These are fun, informal, but we're also going to make them super informational and educational. I feel like, Isaac, the proper format for this conversation, we're at Nearbound Success Day. We're closing out the event after an incredible day of kind of learnings and lessons from people like Jill Rowley, who's the customer's champion, to Jeff Reekers, who started Champion HQ. An incredible day, but I feel like if we're looking forward to 2024, and we have two folks here that have probably talked to more people in customer success than just about anyone, right? You're out there not just evangelizing customer success, you're learning. And I'm curious, Jeff and Jay, I'll turn this back around to you. As you're looking towards FY24 planning, how are you ensuring that you're bringing that customer voice, you know, the advocacy for the customer, into those planning meetings? What are you guys seeing as trends from 23? And how are you, you know, telling the world that they should look at FY24?
Well, I can lead off. 2023 has been sort of a tough year on B2B tech companies, and customer success teams are no exception to that. We've been living off of a glut of free cash for over a decade now. We've gotten a little fat and happy on both go-to-market teams, on customer success teams, which we consider part of the go-to-market function. And now it's all 2024. The layoffs have started to trail off. Like, we saw some a few weeks ago, LinkedIn, a few others had some layoffs, but we've seen that number start to come down. And now what I think you're seeing is that teams are, they're starting to think about how they're going to scale their efforts in 2024, because we still have the same number of customers to look after. We still have new customers we're going to add into the fold, but we're not going to be getting a lot of new resources next year. And so the big focus for a lot of the teams that we've been talking to is, how do you not do more with less, but how do you take what you have and change the way you engage with customers to make it more scalable, more efficient?
Yeah, to tag on, you know, I think Jay mentioned this word scale, right? I think for years, customer success teams have thought about what does scale mean? And I think there was an approach that meant, how can I buy software that helps me automate some emails, some triggers, get a health score? And that's kind of how far they took it. And I think now when we think about the word scale, we're trying to bring it up in a very different light, which is not even a mainly tech-driven way, right? We're trying to think about, how do you scale through interactions of communities and building and bringing together your customers more frequently? How do you bring partners into that? How do you bring the, you know, other sales teams and other parts of the customer journey? But the thing that I think we've just looked at, Jared, to answer your question as you go into 24, is this idea of the way that we're going to win is by being communal. How can we bring more partners into the room? How can we bring customers into the room? And how can we start to share those insights and things together? Because that is going to take the pressure off of our CS teams from having one-to-one engagements every single minute of every single day for 365 days a year, which is typically how teams have grown up until now.
By the way, Jay, I had no idea that you were in Charleston. It's my absolute favorite place. I lived there for 10 years. And this is probably a totally labored stretch, but I feel like Charleston is a place that doesn't really do a lot of marketing, right? It's like the best kept secret. But when you hear about it from people who live there. You hear about it personally. It's like, psst, hey, the best city in the country is Charleston, South Carolina. Like, don't tell anybody else. So I don't know, customer advocacy, there's something in there. But yeah. on the success side, like one thing that I've seen is a lot of companies, they get the idea, okay, we need a flywheel, right? Customers need to do more than be customers. We need to not only retain them, we need to turn them into champions and advocates. And that ends up feeling like, hey, customer, thanks for being a customer. Now will you do us a bunch of favors? Now can we use you, right? How do you do that? How do you turn them into advocates in a way that creates value for them to say, hey, here's something we're going to do that adds value to you, but somehow that also helps to drive pipeline and advocacy. Like, I'd love to know if you have examples of that, because I had definitely seen and felt as a customer myself, oh, I get it. They're trying to use me for marketing, right? The success team is trying to hand me off to use in some marketing campaign.
When Jeff and I started Ganger Retain, the podcast and the community, by the way, if you're not a member of Ganger Retain, you should totally sign up, gangerretain.com. It's free customer success leadership community. But we had this saying, and we didn't invent it. We stole it, I think, from Dave Gerhard, but sorry, they're stacking chairs all around me here, so I'm a little distracted.
Hey, this is not a pre-record, folks. You're having fun out here. You're about a night edition. We're good.
But the saying we always had was be the DJ, not the talent. And so the idea behind that was, like, how do you take the people that are engaging with your brand, that are engaging with your community, whatever that is, and give them the spotlight? You're actually helping advance their careers and giving them ideas and the stage almost. You know, that could be as simple as, like, hey, speaking at our event, at our customer event, is like giving you free publicity for yourself as a professional. And so that's been one of the things that we have focused on from the start. Jeff, please take.
Yeah, I think the other way that we've approached this, Isaac, is you know, I think, like you said, there's usually, like, we approach it, or usually businesses approach it with hey, like, what can I get out of you first? And I think the idea is, like, how do you flip that around, right? And you start to ask things like, hey, Isaac, what are your goals in life? Like, what do you want to do? What are the things that are important to you, right? Like, in some cases, somebody might say, hey, I don't like being visible. I don't want to be, you know, on the website. I don't want to have a quote. Okay, cool. Well, then can we find ways that we, you know, can back channel you? We just want you to have some conversations with other people. Maybe you come to our office hours, which is, you know, kind of an intimate setting where your name's not visible and, you know, you can still talk about your stuff, right? So just, I think the thing that we've tried to approach to make people not feel that way is there's a difference in delivering value, and there's also a difference in feeling valued, is the way I think about it too. So how do you make them feel valued while they're doing those engagements for you and interactions? And there's always got to be kind of a give and take. And I think far too often we think the give is always monetary, like, hey, Isaac, I really appreciate you sending me that referral. I'm going to give you, you know, a free conference ticket, right? Or, hey, I'm going to give you, and I think too, like, sometimes sitting down and asking, like, hey, what's really important to you? Like, maybe it's like, let's bring you in and talk to our product team because you have a couple of things that are going on, right? Or maybe it's, how do we get you more ingrained with other partners or things that we're working with? So I think there's just an equation that you have to figure out in terms of where the value is on both sides that becomes a win.
Jay's over here. Joints are being smoked. Chairs are being stacked. He is living the wild life wherever he real quick, Jeff, on that point. I love what you said about giving something as a thanks. You know, we talk a lot about, like, gifts or, like, incentives for filling out this survey or doing whatever. This is like a funny little heuristic that I've found myself using. Would my kids be impressed is a great way to test if something is a good give. So, like, if someone gives me a gift card to something, it's like, whatever, or just like a generic something. If it's like a custom jersey that has my name on it, my kids think that's cool, right? Like, I'm telling you, as somebody who gets swag and different stuff, there's something about, or like an invitation to something that's VIP, or like a really fancy dinner or something that my kids are like, wow, that's so cool. That's like a great test of something unique that feels like you actually took the time to think of me. So anyway, that's kind of a.
If it was a Sephora gift card, then my girls would be very impressed. So.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Know your customer.
Show me, you know me, Joe Rowley.
This is just a quick example, but you know, we've developed an advocacy kind of method here. And those are like five ways to think about it, right? Those are kind of, what are the advocacy motivations? So gratitude, rewards and gifts, influence, 6 degrees of separation or leadership. And so, like you said, Isaac, and we've been alluding to, right? Like everyone values these things differently. Maybe Jared's like, hey, I'm a rewards and gifts person, you know, send me a pair of sneakers. Maybe, you know, Isaac, you're like, hey, leadership really matters to me. I want to go be thought of as a thought leader. How can I go give you those opportunities? But this type of methodology has been something that we can put in front of customers when they want to become an advocate, when they say, hey, I love your product. I love what you're doing. This is something that we can put in front of them and give them opportunities that they align to value on their side too.
And I might actually come in with a slightly different take, and I'd love your kind of POVs on this either direction. Is I've replaced in 2023. So going into 2024, what are we thinking about and what are we doing? I've replaced in my vocabulary the word give with the word help. And why? Is because, you know, tchotchkes and knickknacks, and this is some of your heuristic, but I don't think, like, for example, as you're looking at 2024, I know that you, Isaac, have some challenges that you want to solve that your kids couldn't be less impressed with, right? But if someone were to help you get there, they would earn an incredible amount of your trust. And I think in terms of the company's North Star, right, wherever your company is going, and I think in terms of like building customer success, you have to have the highest concentration of people in that cohort of people, accounts, customers, who are capable and have demonstrated that they can help them advance their journey, be on that path, right? So helping people get where they're trying to go, right? That's where trust comes from.
So you're telling me I'm supposed to pick vendors based on how much they help me achieve like ARR and company goals instead of the swag that they send me?
Right. So help is greater than give. Right.
Yeah.
And then what is your track record of helping? Right. And I think as marketers, sellers, success people, whoever we are, that's one unified goal is your company has a North Star and it should be aligned to your customer's objective. And then how good are you at helping them get there? I'd love your take on that versus giving. So like in the advocacy framework, for example, maybe I'll ask this in a different way. Trust comes in debits and credits, right? How do you build those credits into that trust bank account that allows that advocacy flywheel, no matter what the incentive or motivation is, right? How do you ensure that there are enough credits in that account to start those debits?
Well, I did really poorly at accounting in college, so you just get the hell out of me. I think, yeah, it's about always having a relationship outside of the key moments is the way I think about that. That's why community is so important. I mean, community is important to us because it's the product we sell. It's what we've built with Ganger Retain, but it's also like how you continually deliver value to people, even when you don't think they're paying attention. One thing that Jeff and I started doing, probably even it was before we even started the Ganger Retain podcast back in 2018, we started posting on LinkedIn. We were consultants at the time in the B2B SaaS space. And we made an agreement with each other. We said, we're not going to gate content and try to, you know, hoard all this information that we're doing. We're going to hoard it for ourselves. We're actually going to share it publicly. We started doing that on LinkedIn. We just gave, just posted every day, right? We learned something new. We had a new technique. We came up with some, you know, strategy for how a company was going to implement a certain process. And we would share that publicly, of course, de-identified. And, what we found was that the switch flipped. And when before that, we were calling into companies trying to get business, and they're like, who are you again? And what do you do? You know, it was just this sort of ramming our heads against the wall. But the switch flipped after we started doing that. We literally, people would say, oh my gosh, Shay and Jeff are here. And they would roll out the red carpet for us. It was completely different. That technique works in software companies. It works in consulting firms. It works in manufacturing. People consume content even when you don't think that they do. And so that helping concept, to your point, Jared, just trying to constantly be helpful and give more than you take is a really powerful one. And it sort of, it sows the ground. It makes the soil fertile for the things that you want to try to accomplish with that audience down the road. And I would say, you know, Jeff and I, have you know, we're in a place now where we get to, we enjoy the relationships that we've created through all that giving, right? And even relationships we don't even know we have yet, but people know us through all that. So I don't know if I answered your question or just ran there, but that's
what I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. We call that learning out loud. And I've kind of come to see that there's kind of two different arenas to do that in. Actually, this is almost connected to a talk that I know is coming up in, I think, Sales Day on public versus private ecosystems, but learning out loud in a very public way, like on social media, whatever, sharing those things, all the benefits you talked about. There's a second way that's really powerful, which is when you make someone feel like they're part of an inside conversation, and they really are. So like with customers, just hitting up a customer and being like, hey, I had this thought the other day about your business and the way, would it be accurate to say this? I'm kind of playing around with this framework. Would you be willing to like jump on a call and like bat around the idea with me? And there's something that feels so special. Mark Killens is great at this, of like, hey, I'm in the process of workshopping something. Give me some feedback. And you pull in one or two people that it's like, it's not public yet. And then when it goes public, guess who's championing it, because they were a part of that process. And like, I think we can feel this sense of we got to hide in our cave until we have the idea perfected. And then we come out and bring it to the world. But pulling in a few people during that process and letting them like get into the ugliness of it is a really great way to not only improve the outcome, but to build trust.
Yeah, it's part of like the change management framework 101, right? Like is you include people early and often, makes them feel like they're a part of that process, and have them, you know, pull that through with you. The thing I was just going to carry on to that too, Isaac, is something that I think we've often thought about in this kind of like giving relationship as well, is, you know, think about the companies or the teams, the people that you want to be around. More often than not, it's people that also are like, making those introductions without you asking. They're talking about you behind your back, but like in a good way, right? Like they're already just naturally doing things that are like advantageous and like wanting you to like to come into that. So I think there's just this like pull that you can start to have around this concept too.
I loved what you just said there in the chat too, Jay. It's hard to tear down what you helped to build. That's a great summary on the point too. Because the reality is that people want to feel like, Isaac, you said this too, because I loved your point. There was just like three back to backs that were just awesome. Is people like to feel like you're a part of the same struggle that they are, right? So a shared struggle, a shared journey, right? That, you know, there's this saying from Paul Graham that the best entrepreneurs have an earned secret. Well, an entrepreneur doesn't have to be a co-founder, folks. An entrepreneur can be that person like a Mark Killens. I've seen Mark create Academy content and like how he pulls that down from a customer, right? You feel like Killens is in your struggle, man. He's like, you know, when he's talking to customers, you're like, that guy's on my side, right? He's here to like make me a part of it. And that academy or course or that training launches, it hits so much harder with other customers. It hits so much harder with partners. I love that sentiment that is just really is a part of what moves people today.
So I would love to ask both of you, because we've kind of been talking primarily about the customer essentially as a partner, right? What is their role beyond just being a customer, but as an advocate? But then there's other types of partners, and how do you pull them in? When does that make sense? And what does that look like with customers? So, you know, figuring out when you could add value to a customer by getting a partner involved, whether that's a tech partner, right? Hey, there's this other tool that integrates and you should, maybe it's an agency partner, right? Maybe it's, there's like, I'm curious, how do you not only use your buyer or your customer to surround your buyers, but how do you use your partners to surround your customers to improve retention? Pull in those other companies that maybe they trust.
Well, go ahead, Jared.
Well, to break this down, because I feel like we could unpack this two directions so much, right? There's ISV partners and a gap between they're customers of these other vendors that an integration could be turned on, but it's not, right? Like that's a CS 101 type play, right? Activation, probably gross retention, and then net retention upside if the usage continues. And then on the other side, there's agency solution providers, consultants, and those typically more are, they're not the same levers, and they're not typically viewed through the same lenses. Here's the question that I would reframe from you. Against both of those types, where do you send people like whenever they're trying to figure these things out, like who has that playbook down? Like Jay or Jeff, have you seen like, hey, here's how you bring in solution partners, agency partners, when a customer has a need from a service perspective you can't fill? Or here's how you make sure that integration adoption is a core part of a CS onboarding journey. I'm just curious where you see that being good or bad, or like what kind of role models might have come up in 23 around those convos?
Yeah, well, I'll give you two thoughts on this. So number one, a good consulting partner is an extension of a customer success team, because a lot of times a consulting partner is going to be deeper into the industry. They're going to be more hands-on. They're probably going to have more availability. They might have access to more dollars where they can spend more focused time working with the customer. So we have all at HireLogic, the company that Jeff and I work for, we have a whole stable of consulting partners that we work with from a community standpoint. If you're trying to launch a customer community, these are people who have been there and done that. One of them is, you know, for example, the woman that launched the Trailblazer community at Salesforce, she's a referral partner with us, and we often send her business. Like when we have a customer that's off the rails, or we have a prospect that's starting to get the idea of community, but they're not really sure what to do yet, we'll say, hey, you should go talk to this person, because they're going to help bring you up to speed a lot quicker than you could get there on your own. And it's not that expensive, right? So that's number one, is thinking about your consulting partners as an extension of your customer success team. And I think, you know, somebody asked a question, I think it was Lincoln, about how do you build partner-to-partner communities, drive and enable CS. One of the things that partner teams can do is bring those consulting partners in front of your CS teams, right? Help educate them on what these consulting partners do for our customers. I've worked in so many companies where the customer success team or the sales team are actually scared of third-party consultants or block them out intentionally,
right?
Because, you know, they were afraid of what they were going to say or do. And there may be some good reasons for that. But what we found is that if you treat them as an extension of your CS team, they act that way and they can add a ton of value to it. So that's sort of one bucket. The other bucket you mentioned is ISV, or like integration partners, technology partners. And that's just, I mean, it's a well-known fact that if my software is integrated with 8 other solutions within your business, my software is more sticky, right? I'm going to retain longer. And so that should be an adoption target or a goal for a customer success team and a customer success
manager.
That's
what I was trying to unpack, actually, Jay. Let's go one layer deeper right on that point. What are the steps or like the operating planning conversations that are happening or should be happening against what you just said? So I'll talk about on the sales side. I feel like some of this stuff's more developed on the sales side, and yet the impact bigger on the CS side. I might say something like partner attach rate, right? And partner attach rate to an opportunity. There's something about integrations and what you just said. What's missing from the parlance or the lexicon between like something like, hey, there's 8 integrations that are available, right? This customer has 8 contracts with ISVs that we have an integration with, and yet X or Y are active. What's missing from this combo?
The business strategy is missing from the conversation. That's probably something that your audience here can help drive, right? Which is, okay, so we have 10 partners that have integrations. So what? I might have, as a customer success executive, I might have 5,000 customers. So it's really about segmenting your customer base, understanding what's going to move the needle for each of those cohorts within your customer base, and what are the key elements of your product and your partner products that need to be driven in terms of adoption or usage that would make those cohorts more sticky. So at HireLogic, for example, we've segmented our customer base down into like 17 discrete segments. We have different plays set up.
You have so many plays, they're stacking up like chairs.
Yeah, we have different plays for every single segment. Now, we prioritize a handful of them because you can't do 17 things at once. You could probably do 3 to 5, but then it's a matter of aligning the most valuable things we could do. In some cases, those might be partnership plays. And as a partner leader, it's your job, I think, to really help understand, really help map the partner value to the specific value proposition for those customer cohorts. So I think the business strategy behind all this is the missing link. And then also tying that to, okay, specifically, we're going to go ask this, you know, cohort A to implement integration Y. What's the plan to actually go do that? Aligned with the customer success leader, aligned with the account management team, whoever it is.
Jeff, are you trying to hop in there?
Just to marry on that point, I think the, like to Jay's point and getting back to your point too, Jared, is also making that a metric that we can measure, right? How can we pull that out? How can we put it into a system that's tracked and say, okay, you know, this month or this quarter, we had 17 more, you know, that attached onto our Salesforce integration. We turned that on. That's great. Okay, let's track them from here on out, right? And so I think just how do you make that simple so that it's a kind of a yes, no, is it turned on, is it not? How do you track that over time so you can start to see those things as they go? Another thing that we've been doing also, Jared, to your point about kind of planning as you go into next year, is we use Gong even for our CS teams. So our sales teams and CS teams use Gong. We just ran an analysis and, you know, we pulled out, okay, what are the top 50 companies that are mentioned on calls? And let's go break those down. Do we have integrations with them or not? Why were they being talked about on the call? What's kind of the use case that it would be, right? And so we're trying to, one, do we have something that already exists that we can make sure and train up our team so that we can integrate that? Or is it something that we should, from the business side, be thinking about as we go into 24? Hey, we need to build an integration with this tool because it's talked about 15% of the time with our customers. So just trying to use some of the data that's coming out of these tools now to help us plan for some of these partnerships.
Let me know in the chat if this conversation that we just unpacked with Jeff and Jay around, let's call it TPAR and SPAR, so tech partner attach rate or service partner attach rate, right? If you all think that we need to build something like that, like the manual and how to track and set up, you know, that type of attach rate on the CS side, because I think there's definitely something there.
Just to level off on the consulting partner side too, one thing that we've tried to do is come to our consulting partners and actually show them, hey, here's kind of what a journey looks like for us. Here's how long we think it takes to onboard a customer. Here's some of the key moments that we want to have with them throughout the year. Here's when we want to do our conference. Here's the journey kind of month one to month 12. And then can you help us understand, consulting partner, where do you like to play, right? Like, are you somebody who likes to do your services at the very beginning before they implement technology? Do you like to do it where they can help with value realization? But I think having that conversation also helps attach rate, because then I'm not plugging a partner in and saying, hey, go talk to this person, and it's not a fit for them as a business either.
Right.
So I think just having that understanding, instead of just saying, oh, they're consulting, they do everything, can we start to figure out kind of where is their sweet spot? What do they like to do? What size companies? But like, we got to have those details and then marry it up with what our journey looks like. Cause that's also how you start to, again, what's the win-win, right? There's the win-win there for both of us if we can introduce them to the right customer.
But before we went live, Jay, you mentioned something that I thought was really interesting. You said, you know, some people that we're partnering with for go-to-market stuff, something really interesting happens when you partner on this go-to-market motions. You end up learning a bunch of insights from those partners about your customer. And I think that's such a great, like, realizing that even though your CS team is talking to customers every day, their context is going to be different. They're going to get in the weeds. And if you get insights that other people have about your customers, you get this different kind of information. And there's just a lot of really cool ways that you can do that. I mean, I know, like, if your CS team to CS team, for example, if you're using something like Reveal, for example, and you can look at some overlap data and say, hey, I can see that this one customer, maybe there's some sort of churn signal. And if you're able to go to that partner and be like, hey, heads up, here's what I learned from our customer, joint customer, about what they're thinking about you and your platform. And then you get that reciprocity. Then they start to come to you and say, hey, heads up, you know, there's a new person at this company that's a joint customer of ours. Like, being able to get insight from people other than your CS team about that customer. Now you get to build this three-dimensional picture of what's going on in that org.
It's no different than what we do when we try to sell software, right? We try to have multiple touch points. It would end the org at multiple levels from multiple people at our company. And same with you know, partners. It's just it's broadening the tent. So Mike, here's a question back to you both, and maybe the audience as well. What role can partner leaders play in driving the connection from customer success team to customer success team, or sales team to sales team? Because to me, a partner manager is a facilitator of the people who are on the front lines to go drive that kind of what you just described, Isaac.
The DJ, not the talent.
What did you do at it? Didn't you sit down with every
Right.
Didn't you sit down with every single success manager?
Well,
I remember this story and I love this story. Tell it, Jared.
I mean, there was some trust that got built from this. And this is what I called the black swan moment in my strategic alliances chapter. And maybe it's worth bringing up in this format, in this podcast, because it is a good one. But the thing that I unlocked that made total sense for me at the time, and if you can find permutations of this, there is millions and dozens of millions of dollars for your company right here, which is the black swan moment, which is what is the partner companies, the top three mission critical CEO objectives, right? That's in the company kickoff, right? Okay, great. And then what about my product? What about my product helps that customer get there? And then what about the person that I'm talking to? Is their compensation tied to it? This is three prong, right? Stool needs three legs to sit on. So, right, it's your company, it's their company objective goals. And then it's like the CSM. So Adrift and Marketo, it was Marketo's number one North Star was net dollar expansion and retention, right? Drift, typically we converted more leads from the website into contacts in Marketo, which was what? Marketo's only lever for upsell was how many contacts in the database. So here's what I did. What I did is I went and I sat down hand-to-hand combat face-to-face in every single Marketo office with every CSM, one-on-one, hand-to-hand combat. And I got over 550 direct intros from those CSMs at Marketo to Drift customers, right? And that's because why though? I was like, hey, you see that upsell that Sarah just closed? That's just because she brought Drift in. Check this out. And they were all like, whoa, that's incredible, right? So that's a little bit of the story, you know, that I felt like was an amazing
and
play.
And maybe that's one of those do things that don't scale, but regardless, the principle of like, as a partner manager, go find what is the incentive facing those CS members on your team and your partner's team and go sit down and be like, I can help you achieve that. Not, hey, yes. would you involve yes. partners? Because it would help me, right? Like I can help you achieve your metric.
That inversion was very important in that point, right? I made that about the CSM.
There's a concept that I like to think about a lot too that I think fits into this, which is I think we also have to be pushing CS teams to be understanding their customers' business better and the market better, right? A lot of times what we've asked CSMs to do is at the very bottom layer is just say, hey, you got to know our product the best. You need to know the best practices. And that's where it's kind of ended, right? And that's great because they can help us drive adoption, but does that really help us create business value? And does that help us find win-wins? And so there's two other layers that they need to get to as a CSM, CS leader person. Like you got to take, you have to know the product. Okay, great. We knew that. The business side, how does your customer make money? And what are the tools that they do in order to make money, right? It's not just yours. So you have to know their ecosystem and what they're playing in. And then the third layer is the market. So you have to know, this kind of gets back to your points earlier, right? Like there is this ecosystem in the market where tools, whether it's ISV partners or whether it's consulting partners, right? But there is an ecosystem that actually exists, and you need to start knowing that better, because you can also do things you can name drop in a conversation that also adds trust and authenticity and gets you some authority, right? If you start to say, hey, I know Jared. Yeah, I've talked to, hey, I just did a podcast with him last week. So that's a big piece.
Amazing. I love customer-centered conversations more than any conversation, because it feels like it just orients us all back to the only thing that matters, the true boss. None of us have jobs if we don't got customers, right? At the end of the day, that's the reality, the hard facts.
I thought we made money by just like, you know, being on
LinkedIn.
Being on LinkedIn.
I thought we made money by raising it, but I guess that's not the case either. Huh?
Those days are over.
Yeah, that's a hot take there in this market. Here's what I want to do. I want to end it this way. Jay, we'll start off with you, then we'll do Jeff. Jay, and that's just alphabetical order after the first initial. So Jay, let's start with you. What is your one top tip for FY24 planning going into next year?
Pivot your thinking around customer engagement from one-to-one to one-to-many. Take a community-driven approach to engaging with your customers. It'll make them happier. It'll make you more efficient and productive, and you're not going to lose anything by doing it, I promise you. And we're happy to chat about that more if you have questions on what that means.
Amazing. Jeff, top tip for FY24 planning.
Just go find more partners.
There we go. You heard it at last. Okay, we're going to end it right there. There's that. The clip.
He knows,
said it.
He knows how to please.
You know? I love the audience, right? Jay and I talk all the time, so he stole mine. But I think the other, you know, I think the other thing to think about too is, I think we've all invested in a lot of technology, and we all have a lot of SaaS platforms, products that we buy. And I think going into 2024, something that we're doing, and I think a lot of companies are doing, right, is evaluating what those things are. And so before you cut it, though, before you just start going through and cutting something, really try and think about, like, what are we trying to get to with our technology and our scaled approach? How do these systems integrate? But I think you really have to take a keen eye to that. To me, you know, you can't just start cutting willy-nilly because we need to. You just got to figure out, like, what are the right pieces of the puzzle that fit within our journey. And so I think that's just something for people to think about is, you know, which technology, and it's not just the tech works, right? It can be partners. There can be a win-win on either side.
This has been absolutely amazing. Jeff and Jay, everybody on here, go subscribe to Gain, Grow, Retain. Go join the community if you want to learn more from these guys. As they said, they're learning out loud. They're sharing their stuff. So connect with them on LinkedIn. This has been an awesome crossover pod, a great way to end Nearbound Success Day.
100%, 100%. And I think we got full commit from me. So, like, they don't know this yet, and you don't either. But we're going to build that Nearbound Success playbook, though, about how to do this across tech partners and across agency partners. And that's something we'll absolutely ship in Q1.
I know what you're, so the
we,
number.
We absolutely are going to do that.
That just got
committed on air.
I love that. I mean,
Isaac, I hope you don't have any plans the last week of December.
No, Jared has a way of committing my team to things in public venues that I didn't know about until we're live.
The audience wants it. I see the emojis. I see the chat.
Yeah,
let's do it.
He likes to write checks that I had to cash. It's actually, strangely, it's a good dysfunctional relationship.
Let's go, Kevin Linehan. Let's go.
Hey, this has been absolutely awesome, Jeff and Jay. Thank you so much to you both and everybody. We hope we will see you around tomorrow. It's Nearbound Marketing Day. We've got Chris Walker. We've got, oh my gosh, Harry Mack is doing a live performance. Nearbound Social. We've got how to run Nearbound events. Mark Killens and Nick Bennett introducing a brand new framework. And you know, Mark is the king of frameworks. We got so much stuff. It's going to be absolutely amazing. So join us tomorrow. It starts at noon Eastern. I think we're going to get to start a little early for those who want to join a little early, a little special fun session with Adam Ola, our MC. So lots of great stuff coming. This has been amazing. Thanks to you both.
See you.